You hear that sound? That's the sound of waves splashing against the rugged volcanic rocks that make up the Canary Islands. Situated along the northwestern coast of Africa, the Spanish archipelago has been home to eruptions and remnant ash that have given the islands a unique biosphere and microclimate. Welcome back to Point of Origin. On today's episode, we're talking wine in the Canary Islands with Whetstone magazine contributor Monica Goya. Monica has a special connection to the Canary Islands as her mother grew up on the island of Tenerife.
Yeah, so my mom grew up on Tenerife, and that's where half of my family still lives because she's the only one who left. And so when I was growing up, I would go there every summer, and also sometimes other school holidays like Christmas. And my mom has a very special relations with the vineyards, because when growing up, my granddad he had a job. So my mom always talked with very love about the vineyards and that life of tending the land. And then when she moved to mainland Spain after she married, there were no vineyards here. So whenever we went, she would be very excited to visit my uncle's vineyards and to see what he was doing. And I feel that if my mom had been born later on, maybe something that she might have pursued as a profession. But of course, there were no opportunities back then. She grew up during the Franco dictatorship, so women were not as free as we are today to do what we please. I started to become interested in wine somehow, in wine from there, because all my life I had this, my mom had been telling me about how the things they did when they work.
In 1971, a massive volcano erupted on La Palma, and the remnants of the ash imparted in the soil gave the smaller Canary Island a unique quality.
The Canary Islands are 7 main volcanic islands, plus a few smaller ones, located in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Morocco. They are a tropical holiday spot for many Northern Europeans, notoriously Brits, Germans, and Nordics as well. The temperatures are mild year-round, rarely going above 30 degrees Celsius, which is, I think, near 90 Fahrenheit in the summer, or below 17 in winter. However, it's a land of contrasts, not only because of the changing landscape from arid plains to deep narrow valleys, black volcanic sand beaches, green forests or jagged mountains, but also because of the weather. There are dozens of microclimates within the same island, and this is due to the rugged nature of the islands and their greater elevations. For example, La Palma, which is one of the smaller islands. So this last volcano to erupt in the archipelago. It's called the Teneguía volcano, and it's located in the south of the island. So it's not far from where Victoria has her winery and some of her vineyards. La Palma, in terms of soil, is actually like two different islands, because the north is geologically much older than the south. So in the north, the soil is rich in organic matter. You can find clay, for example, whereas in the south, because it's much younger, the soil is richer in minerals, but it's poorer in organic matter. Trade winds soften the hardness of the nearby Sahara Desert climate. So the weather, in conclusion, is very nice, with almost 3,000 hours of sunshine per year.
Wow.
And one of the most famous crops from these islands are bananas, which are grown in 6 out of the 7 islands, mostly in Tenerife and La Palma.
Okay.
And if you ask a person from mainland Spain for a characteristic food from the islands, they would very likely say plátanos, which means bananas in Spanish. But they are different to the ones imported from South America that we get here in Europe. They are smaller and sweeter, and they have also black dots on their skin.
Let's talk about another important product of the Canary Islands, wine.
Wine is actually very important there for the people who live there, but I don't know if it's as well known outside the islands.
Mm-hmm.
So the culture of wine, I mean, wine has been produced in the Canaries for over 500 years, and is even mentioned in some of Shakespeare's plays. But until very recently, it was not something that maybe people were necessarily proud of. And now I think that's changing, because there is a new generation of winemakers who are doing amazing things with the grape varieties that are indigenous to the islands, and they have vines that are over 200 years old in some cases. So I think, I mean, it's a sweet moment because things are improving massively.
One of those new winemakers Monica refers to is Victoria Torres Peces. On the island of La Palma, Victoria tends to vines that are over 130 years old. The Torres Bodega is at Fuencaliente, which is at the very southern tip of La Palma, on that pure black volcanic ash. But the vines she cares for can be found all over the island, all ungrafted and consequently very old.
So I met her when I went to La Palma. I had had her wines before. Mm-hmm. And last year when I visited La Palma, I contacted her and I asked her if I could visit. And I had read a bit about her and what she was doing. And it fascinated me that she embarked herself on this mission to rescue old vineyards. And when you are a woman, maybe it's harder. So many of these wineries are still led by men, and they take the decisions. So having a woman approaching you when you are, you know, a man maybe in your 70s or 80s, and she tells you that she wants to look after your vineyards if you can no longer work. You need to be very brave to do that in a place where, as I said, this is still, there are women, of course, but it's very men-dominated still. So she went to complete her studies in a different island. And when she went back in 2008, she started working with her dad, and she learned mm-hmm. the tricks of the trade from him. Of course, as a child, I'm sure she spent a lot of time in the vineyards, because that's how you grow up when you are there with a family that works the land. And also, it's remarkable about Victoria that she only had one day off when she was working with her dad. And she used that one day off to go and work with a German couple who had organic vineyards in the north of the island. And the island is, La Palma is very abrupt, so there is no motorway. And she right. used that one day off, instead of to rest, to just go and keep working even more in different vineyards. So that shows a lot of determination and how willing she was to learn as much as she could.
Victoria Torres is a fifth-generation winemaker taking over from her father, Juan Matias Torres, in 2014, who she had been working closely underneath to learn how to successfully operate the family business.
This new generation of winemakers started to do things differently. They are not trying to compete with industrial wine from other parts of the country that is cheap, because they don't have the means to do that cheap wine. In other parts, the terrain is flat and it's easy to use machines to produce the wine. Whereas here, I mean, on the islands, because of the nature of the islands, is most of the work is done by hand. So unless you do an artisan product, it's hard to sustain, because you can ask people, you can ask for, 20 euros for a bottle of wine, which is not good quality, but you can either make cheap wine there, because as I said, many of the works in the vineyards have to be made by hand. So these people started to appreciate that the quality of the grapes, native grapes that they have in the Canaries, and they started to be proud of these grapes that not many people knew, and they started to work the vineyards using maybe like a sort of minimal intervention approach, if you like, so that it would show the soil, it would show different things that maybe not many people did in the previous years.
And Monica, I'm interested in the relationship between the return to indigenous grape varieties and the sort of conservation mindset as it relates to the soil. In other words, do you think that there is a relationship between the movement to conserve indigenous grape variety and a movement to, let's say, conserve the health of the soil as we see in natural wine? Do you think those are similarly aligned?
I think they go together, at least in the cases of the winemakers I have met during these years. They have a great interest in keeping tradition alive. They are rescuing some vineyards that, because the average of the average age of wine growers is very high. It's over 60 years old. So some of them can no longer work the land, and these people are appearing and just trying to preserve that tradition and that heritage. And in some cases, they have found vineyards that had been abandoned, basically, and they are trying to recover them. So it's also a matter of patience, because maybe for 3 or 4 years they are working in these vineyards and not getting anything in return.
In the 15th century, the Canary Islands already had a well-established wine industry and a moniker of sorts to go with it, Canary Sack. Sack is an antiquated wine term referring to white fortified wine and possibly derivative of the Spanish saca, meaning to draw out. A method similar to the Solera system used in sherry production.
The islands are part of Spain since the 15th century. And it was the French, Portuguese, and Spanish were the main invaders. So some of the ways in which the grapes are grown, they have different influences, and some people say it was the Portuguese who brought grapes, it was the Spanish. It's probably a mix of the people who first lived there after the conquest.
So sometime in the 15th century, the French/Portuguese most likely planted vines in the Canary Islands. Is that?
I guess it was probably first in the 16th century.
16th century.
The conquest ended in 1496. Tenerife was the last island to fall. Tenerife and La Palma, actually. The first ones were the most eastern islands. And then also it is said that some of the vines planted in America were coming from the Canary Islands, because these islands became the first stop on the way to the New World.
What makes her wine most notable is the farming. And we've talked a little bit about natural wine on the podcast, about low intervention viticulture. So can you tell us about what the different grape varieties are that she's growing, and also what the characteristics of the wines are?
She grows white and red grapes. Probably the most famous one in the whites is the Malvasia aromatica, which means aromatic Malvasia, and is like the start. But she grows other white varieties as well, like Listan Blanco, Diego, and Albillo Criollo. And she has red grapes like Negra Mull, Listan Negro, or Listan Prieto.
The white grapes in use at the Torres Peces domain are both familiar from the Canary Islands as a whole and also from southern Spain. These are Listan Blanco and Malvasia, and the main red variety is Negra Mull. There is also Listan Prieto, perhaps better known as a variety which has recently been revived in South America, where it is called País in Chile or Criolla in Argentina.
As someone who's had some of these grapes, but not all of them, I think the Canary Island wines specifically have a very beautiful but kind of subtle aromatic quality. And I don't mean subtle in terms of what you can smell, but it's more like elegant. It's not like a lot of heavy fruit, or it's not like super funky. It's more like, you know, sea notes, earth notes, mineral notes, metal notes, saline. Is this just like in terms of the way that you would describe some of these grapes? Because this isn't like, you know, obviously Chardonnay or Merlot or Cabernet that many folks in the West are used to drinking. So can you speak like on the feeling of drinking some of these different wines, or the taste, the impression that was left?
I completely agree with what you said. But for example, one of my favorite wines from Victoria is one called Las Machuqueras. And this, I was lucky enough to visit the plot with her. It was the first one we visited when I went. And it's a vineyard that has been in her family for five generations. So she is one that she loves. And I believe her dad made white wines with all the white grape varieties that they had, but she started making a single vineyard white wine from this Machuqueras place, and it's 100% Listan Blanco grape, and half of the vines are over 100 years old. So I don't know, maybe it's my imagination, but I think you can feel that resistance in the wine, if that makes sense. And it's elegant, and it has the minerality that volcanic wines often have. And it's fresh and it's complex at the same time. So it's like you could have that wine for a special occasion, but you could also have it on a normal day. It's just, you know, a wine that you can drink, and it has that because it's complex. At the same time that is fresh.
I think it's a keen observation, because Listan Blanco and Listón Negro were my first introductions into wines from the Canary Islands. And the Listón Blanco in particular, what you say about the ability to enjoy it for a special occasion or on a normal day is so very true. I really love that about so many wines, right? Like that feel that it could be dressed up or that feel really casual too. Or I guess clothes or anything for that matter. That's such a good quality, that kind of utility. Is there anything else we should know about?
Maybe it's worth mentioning the Malvasía Aromática Naturalmente Dulce, which is naturally sweet aromatic Malvasía. It's a spectacular wine, but it's not for every day because it's a sweet wine. So you are meant to have it in small doses. And I tasted it last time I tasted it was during a wine fair in London earlier this year. And Beekeep was there. And it's difficult to put into words the amount of layers of significance that the existence of this wine represents, because, you know, the care, the patience, the tradition. So she visits the vineyards for weeks, waiting for the exact moment when these Malvasía Aromática grapes are ready to be harvested. A harvest that she does together with only one person. And she only makes this wine in exceptional vintages. So it's not a wine that she produces every year. And I remember the honeyed taste, and even if it was a sweet wine, it had a very surprising or balance between sweetness and acidity. I'm not used to drink sweet wines, but that's what surprised me. And it's a funny anecdote. After this fair, I was outside talking to some other wine professionals, and I mean, they didn't know that I had met Beekeep before or anything like that. They were talking about their favorite wines for the day after a whole day tasting wines from Spain. And 4 out of 5 had said that the wine that they were more surprised and amazed by was this Malvasía Aromática that she makes. And I thought I really like that.
Yeah, I think it's so much harder to make an excellent sweet wine as opposed to making excellent dry wine, because it's so much harder to find that balance, you know? Well, I know that I'm ready to visit the Canary Islands. It's a place that I've always wanted to go. Victoria Torres's wines, are they widely available? Or are they widely exported?
They are widely exported, so they are widely available elsewhere, but not so widely available on the island.
Oh, don't you hate that?
So yeah, I wasn't very happy about that when I was there, because, I mean, also for her, because it's nice that people where you live appreciate or have access to what you are doing, especially when it's remarkably different to the wines that other people are making there. But I mean, you can find it, but if you don't look for it, it's hard to come across it on the island.
At Whetstone, our love of wine has been exhaustively chronicled and continues to be. But in our reporting, for sure, one of the most exciting trends we've seen on a global level is precisely this aforementioned intertwining relationship between the preservation of native grapes and natural wine production, which summons a hands-off viticultural and cellar management technique. Without much consideration, either could be viewed as a trend catering towards a growing consumer base of conscientious wine drinkers. But there is a real story underlying this about a revolution that is happening in the vineyards, a revolution that matches the native grapes and its natural soil habitat, that refuses the pesticides or additions that serve at the whims of the winemaker instead of, let's say, the land or its traditions. If we are to have a future in agriculture on this planet, we would certainly benefit from more relationships between what grows natively above the ground and what is well suited for the vital life force below it. We'd like to thank our guests today, Monica Goya and Victoria Torres Peces. You can read Monica's full story in Whetstone Volume 6 or also on Instagram at Whetstone Magazine. We'd also like to thank our incredible podcast producer, Celine Glager. Celine, you are the best. To our editor and Whetstone partner and director of video, David Alexander in London. Appreciate you, Dave. Thanks to our Whetstone production intern, Quentin LeBeau. And last but not least, my business partner, Mel Shee, who makes all things at Whetstone possible. Thank you, Mel. We'd also like to thank our partners in production at iHeartRadio, to Gabrielle Collins, our supervising producer, and executive producer, Christopher Hasiotis. We'll be back next week with more from the world of food worldwide. Point of Origin listeners, as you know, rating and reviewing our podcast is the very best way for more people to find out about our very important work at Whetstone. So please, if you're able, we would really appreciate a positive review and rating on Apple Podcast. That will help others like yourself find out about Point of Origin.